ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय कच्छिन् न कुशलं नाथा इन्द्रियार्थार्था वेदिनां व्यसनावाप एतस्मिन् पतितानं स्वकर्मभि कच्छिन्न कुशलं नाथा इन्द्रियार्थार्थवेदिनम् व्यसनावाप एतस्मिन् पतितानं स्वकर्मभिः कच्छिन्नः कुशलं
नाथा
इन्द्रियार्थार्थवेदिनम् व्यसनावाप एतस्मिन् पतितानं स्वकर्मभिः Kachit,
weather,
na,
hour,
kushalam,
good fortune,
nata,
O
masters,
indriya artha,
sense gratification,
as the ultimate goal of life,
artha vedinam,
persons who understand only sense gratification.
Vyasana,
illness.
Avape,
got.
Etasmin,
in this material existence. Patitanam,
those who are fallen.
Svakaramabhi,
by their own ability.
Translation.
Pritumars inquired from the sages about persons entangled in this dangerous material existence because of their previous actions. Could such persons, whose only aim is sense gratification, be pleased with any good fortune? Be blessed with any good fortune. purport. Maharaj Prithu did not ask the Kumaras about their good fortune, for the Kumaras are always auspicious by dint of their life and celibacy. Since they are always engaged on the path of liberation, there was no question of ill fortune. In other words, Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, who are strictly following the path of spiritual advancement, are always fortunate. The question was asked by Prithu Maharaj for his own sake, since he was in the position of a grihastha and in charge of the royal authority. Kings are not only grihasthas, who are generally absorbed in sense gratification, but are sometimes employed to kill animals and hunt because they have to practice the killing art. Otherwise, it is very difficult for them to fight their enemies. Such things are not auspicious. Four kinds of sinful activities, associating with women for illicit sex, eating meat, intoxication, and gambling, are allowed for the Kshatriyas. For political reasons, sometimes they have to take to these sinful activities. Kshatriyas do not refrain from gambling. One vivid example is the Pandavas. When the Pandavas were challenged by the opposite party, Duryodhana, to gamble and risk their kingdom, they could not refrain. And by that gambling, they lost their kingdom, and their wife was insulted. Similarly, the Kshatriyas cannot refrain from fighting if challenged by the opposite party. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj, taking consideration of all these facts, inquired whether there is any auspicious path. Grihastha life is inauspicious because grihastha means conscious for sense gratification. And as soon as there is sense gratification, one's position is always full of dangers. This material world is said to be padam padam yad vipadam nate sham, dangerous in every step. Bhagavatam 10:14-58. Everyone in this material world is struggling hard for sense gratification. Clearing all these points, Prithu Maharaj inquired from the four Kumaras about the fallen conditioned souls who are rotting in this material world due to their past bad or inauspicious activities. Is there any possibility for their auspicious spiritual life? In this verse, the word indriyartharta vedinam is very significant. It indicates persons whose only aim is to satisfy the senses. They are also described as patitanam, or fallen. Only one who stops all activities for sense gratification is considered to be elevated. Another significant word is svakarmabhi. One becomes fallen by dint of his own past bad activities. Everyone is responsible for his fallen condition because of his own activities. When activities are changed to devotional service, one's auspicious life begins. So here, auspicious is being defined as that which is connected to Krishna, which is spiritual. We're not saying here auspicious means it's a good activity, a nice activity of this world. Right, something religious, something moral, something ethical. We're saying what is connected to the Lord is auspicious, what's not connected is not auspicious. That's simple. Because Prithu Maharaj is speaking with the Kumaras. Kumaras are engaged in the path of liberation, which means spiritual. So when you're dealing with the spiritual path, then good and bad is defined as spiritual is good, what is not spiritual is bad. Right? That's simple. If one is working within the realm of karma, then good is what's according to Shastra and gives prosperous results, and bad is what's against Shastra and doesn't give proper results. Right? So we have to understand the context that it's also being discussed here. The same time as Prithu Maharaj is inquiring, making this inquiry concerning himself. Means it's for everyone, but he's putting it into the context that it means him. So, because even though he's doing pious activities, means that the Kshatriya goes out and for the fighting art is killing animals, then it is not inauspicious in that it's sinful. The Kshatriya will not go to hell for going out and killing the animals. Right? He's following Shastra. So we could say, no, he's according to Shastra's duty. So it's auspicious. But the point is this so-called auspiciousness is being done just to be a good Kshatriya. The point is Kshatriya is not auspicious if it's not connected to Krishna. That's the point. Brahman, Kshatriya, they're not, the auspiciousness is it's connected with spiritual life. If it's not connected, it's not auspicious. It's that simple. We always have to remember this. This point's being made again and again. So whenever we say, no, but it's good, it's recommended by Shastra, is it connected to Krishna? That's all. If it's connected, it's good. If it's not connected, it's not good. So Preetam Myers is saying, I'm doing all these things, but I'm not necessarily being Krishna conscious. Therefore, it's inauspicious. Right? He's not taking the platform, yes, you know, you're all great devotees, and I'm a great devotee, and hey, we're all here together, isn't that great? And, you know, and there's a whole bunch of Brahmins here also, and, you know, so it's even more great, and really sad for all the citizens, you know, just ordinary blokes, you know, like that. But, you know, what can we do for these guys, you know? Like that, that's not his, how he's, the presentation. His presentation is that we are performing these duties, we're getting absorbed in them, we're forgetting about the ultimate goal of life. Because generally speaking, that's what happens, right? I mean, we'll say, no, but he's just, we're chanting our japa. Are we remembering Krishna? Is this, we understand, this name is Krishna. Or are we thinking of something else? You know, what we're cooking for lunch, you know, this guy said this, that guy said that, you know, oh, hey, I have to do this today. Right? Or just, you know, I'm tired. Right? So, directly dealing with Krishna and we forget. So why dealing with material activities that are pious, we wouldn't forget. Right? So this is Preetam Myers' point. Is how does the ordinary person, an ordinary basically here means in the material world. If you're in the material world, basically speaking, you can say you're ordinary. Those in the spiritual world, now those are special. But within those within the material world, those Brahmins, Vaishnavas who are connecting everything to Krishna, seeing things on the transcendental platform, then that's special. But if that's not the focus, if that's not the success, then we're addressing what is ordinary. Right? And here, Bhagavatam, following the Vedas, doing your prescribed duties perfectly, that's called ordinary. Right? Not doing that, that's called generally, Prabhupada uses the words disgusting and other such words like that. Sinful is called disgusting, abominable. Right? These are generally the terms used. Right? So ordinary means a really nice, pious person, but not necessarily Krishna conscious. Right? So here then he's at how to deal with this, because this is very important, because our whole day is filled with little niceties, important elements, necessary. You can't not do it. But what's its connection? We're brushing our teeth. What are we thinking about? Are we thinking about this is, you know, what Sanatana Goswami recommends or Prabhupada said to do this, and so we're brushing like this and so many things in Shastra, or my dentist told me to brush my teeth and my teeth will fall out and I don't want my teeth to fall out. Right? So if that's the case, are we Krishna conscious? Right? Technically, how is it even pious? You know what I'm saying? Because we're not thinking that I'm brushing my teeth because Shastra says. It's part of the Panchrakrit process of deity worship. Lord Varahadev states in the Varaha Purana that if you get up and go into the deity room without brushing your teeth, then, you know, it's not going to work out very nice for you. Right? So, is that why we're brushing our teeth? No, it's because our mommy said, the dentist said, you know, so many other things. We don't brush our teeth and nice and shiny, then the boys or the girls won't look at us, or, you know, something we're doing it for. So, why is this going on? Right? So, this is what Preetam Myers is talking about. all these ordinary moments in our day, right? All these moments, right? After dinner, you spend prasad remembering this, and then when you walk into the kitchen and there's a sink full of dishes, and then immediately we're absorbed in Krishna and thinking of Krishna, you know, or it's okay, here we go again, or it's not my night, you know, it's like, you know, something's going on. But the point is how is it Krishna? So this is what makes it ordinary. So here is that then he's pointing out is that because if it's connected to Krishna, it's devotional service. We don't call engaging the senses in the Lord's service sense gratification, but the senses are being engaged. We call it sense gratification when it's not connected to Krishna, right? And even if it's technically, ultimately connected to Krishna, are we connected to Krishna, right? It means my tongue is tasting prasad, right? So I am getting purified, but am I remembering that this is prasad, right? So therefore, yes, the senses are connected to Krishna. That's why it's called devotional service. But we don't call it pure devotional service because we're not connected, right? We're connected. We identify with the senses. The senses are connected to the prasad. Therefore, we're getting the benefit. Does that make sense? So this is what he's pointing out here, is that these little things is that the devotee then goes through and analyzes in his life. Doesn't mean, oh, we're a gross sense gratifier, we're disgusting, we're sinful, we're not a... No, that's not the point either. Preetu Maharaj is not saying that. He's just saying, these are the facts. We're situated nicely, but we're not necessarily always Krishna conscious, so what to do about that? How to improve? The four Kumaras, he's asking the four Kumaras, they're always God conscious. So a good authority. But he wants to know for myself, right? And we've seen from him is that he's so glorious, the Lord and the four Kumaras are coming. He didn't invite them. They came on their own. Right? So he's very special, but he's still thinking, I'm not connecting everything to the Lord. I could do better. So therefore, then that's the position where we say, we're fallen. We're fallen because we're not always connecting all the aspects of our senses to the Lord. We're connected, it's devotional. What's not connected, that's sense gratification. Just like if you're contemplating how to do something nicely for Krishna, then that's called manana. It's vichar, thinking of different ways and how to do something connected to the Lord. How to describe, how to discuss, how to endeavor. But if you're doing the same thing, you know, and not thinking of Krishna, that's called mental speculation. Simple, like that. Connected, glorious. Not connected, maybe pious, but still ordinary. So another point is that one becomes fallen by one's previous activities. It's not someone else's fault. Any difficulty we have, that we're experiencing at any time, in any place, any circumstances, is due to our own past endeavors. Like that. There's no one else to blame. As long as we want to blame someone else, then generally speaking, we'll have to stay in the material world, because you can't blame anyone in the spiritual world. So the only place you can blame them is here. You'll have to remain here to be able to do that, right? But if it's our own endeavor, then one can go back to Godhead, because one sees the actual position. One sees how he should be serving Krishna, but he feels he's not. And so therefore, then Krishna can give his mercy. But otherwise, then justice is the main thing, and then we'll always have to be working out how to create a just situation. Right? Because you need a material situation for material justice. Right? Spiritual situation, you know, requires spiritual consciousness, right? Devotion like that. Yeah. Okay. So Prabhupada is saying when we make that change, that's when auspiciousness begins. So for the devotee then, that means his life is auspicious. He's taken up the devotional path. So therefore, his life is auspicious. Now it's just a matter of making that auspiciousness consistent that it's there at all times, all places, all situations throughout his life. Right? That gives the perfect results. Like that. Otherwise, then there's something that's not pleasing to Krishna. Any questions on this? Yes.
Well, you just spoke about justice.
On the topic of justice, is there a way for Krishna conscious management or judiciary system and authority to exercise their duty of implementing justice, the laws, in a way that is spiritual? Because you spoke about material justice. What would be spiritual justice, where the authority knows, or how would they know how to be just in a spiritual way? We know how they are trying to be just with their limited understanding of who is right and who is wrong. But how would we do that to take into account karma and what is due to one?
Mm-hmm. I mean, spiritual, see, well, what means in this definition here, as we mentioned in the beginning of the class, that the question is being presented to the four Kumaras, so it's going to be on the platform of Vedanta. You know, it's going to be transcendental approach rather than taking apara vidya, which will be connecting the material. So spiritual justice means we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are, expanding from the internal potency. Our abilities, our cognition, everything is coming from that spiritual platform. So actual justice would be therefore to engage our nature fully in pursuance of that internal, assisting the internal potency in serving Krishna. That would be spiritual justice. Now, within the material scope, we can spiritualize justice. But there's no spiritual justice in the material world, right? Because the point is justice is only a consideration when someone's not performing their prescribed duty. Right? If you perform your prescribed duty, we call that pious. Right? At the same time, if someone doesn't perform their prescribed duty, that's impious. Right? So that's where our question comes up. Because otherwise, justice being presented as a topic on its own, then it has to be part of pranamoy, which means the second level of consciousness. So justice, economics, ethics, that platform. Because if we look at higher justice, because we mentioned the devotional, others, justice is the soul, should be engaged in its natural position as Brahman, in the environment of Brahman, right? Dharma means you have an inherent nature, you follow the duties according to that. You don't, then it's impious, right? And the material platform is that I'm working hard to make my facility, someone else is working hard to make theirs. So where this clashes, you know, in other words, when there's a controversy over whose profit it is, right, or the methods that they go about getting it. In other words, by your method of getting your profit, you've made it difficult for someone else to get theirs. Then that would be on the platform of artha, right? That's generally what we would call justice, right? So the point is, the shastra means it can only really be understood if one understands dharma, or what is the inherent nature that someone has, what are their duties. So then in a particular situation, what the duties are of the individuals involved, what should have been done and what wasn't done, then you see what's the difference there. So is one wrong, one's right, both are wrong. Both are right, but are working on different levels or different aspects, or they're talking apples and oranges. You know, whatever one has to then look at it from there. Now, that's pious. Now, doing that because you want to see that Krishna's community of devotees are able to function together because they have material conditioning and therefore they still have the sense of I and mine. So to create an environment where the devotees are peaceful so that each one's eye and mind doesn't get in the way of the other's eye and mind. Therefore, we're trying to create a peaceful situation because in a peaceful situation, then people are more easily God-conscious, especially if they're distracted by justice, then there's no peace, so they don't think of Krishna. Krishna makes that point in the Gita, where there's no peace, there can't be happiness. And the happy person is the Krishna-conscious person, right? Like that. So, therefore, then following that whole pious process, so that there's a favorable environment for Krishna's devotees to not be distracted by their material conditioning, that would be spiritualized justice. Does that make sense?
Let's suppose at the time of Mahabharata, what would the ruler do in the case of someone stealing from someone else? Would there be some sort of an astrologer to ascertain whether he's paying his karmic due back because the other person stole something in the past life?
See, the point is you don't... The judgment is not made on what is their past karma. That is part of your own personal development. That's part of ashram. See, justice here we're talking is in the occupation. A king, his occupation, one of them is to hold court to see that justice is there. So that's varna. But what one is getting from one's own past karma, that is one's own personal development. That's ashram. So it's a different thing. So that is the individual, in his own contemplation of why this happened to me, would consider that. But in the court, you're only discussing what was done, in what situation, who did to who, in what situation. What was the moods, what were the attitudes, what were the reasons, that's all.
You mean for the sake of setting a standard and an example in
society? No, just because
society?
That's all you can deal with. Yeah. Means the judge can only deal with what has happened in the in contemporary environment. You don't consider what's in the past if it's in past lives. Like that. If it's there's some consideration of something known from within this life that the person has stolen before, and then they were, you know, it was dealt with, and then again they stole, so now they're being blamed again for stealing, and they're saying, I didn't steal and the other person did, it's not going to necessarily weigh too well in their favor. Right? But that's known. But unknown, then that's not part of the process of judgment. That's not used.
Thank you.
That's only for your own personal Krishna conscious understanding. Yes.
It seems that the Apichet Sudaracharo would be a consideration in spiritual justice.
Of course it's going to be. But what we're saying, because he was not addressing that devotional element, he was talking about the mechanics of the justice system, like that. But of course, when you're dealing with justice, the point is justice, as we explained, is on the material platform. So the point is someone, are they situated means, do they value Krishna consciousness? Do they see Krishna consciousness as the most important element in the life? Now whether they can practice that or not, that's not the consideration. If Krishna consciousness is what is prominent, that's then the element of the Apichet Sudaracharo would be the consideration. If they're not actually, they don't keep Krishna as prominent, then they're not well situated. So then, of course, because it's devotional, there's some element that is a consideration. So one would then take the considerations that one would for Brahmins, dealing on the Brahminical platform. But that means being off the bodily platform in the way of being committed to it, that's lacking. I mean, that's there. Understanding that I shouldn't be doing this even though I am, it's not a good situation, and I am endeavoring to give it up even though I may not have. That's where Apichet Sudaracharo is applied. Then it's a matter of, okay, then the actual justice is Because as we are defining as doing proper activity according to your nature, that's pious. Going against that's wrong. So since we're supposed to be servant of Krishna, then what is in their life that's creating the situation that they're unable to be have that strength to properly perform their duty without deviation? So what could we do to enhance that? Right? What, you know, association, what situation? So it's not a matter of punishment, because the point is being in the material world is already punishment. But because we think material world's actually a nice place, then we consider within that you have to create a bad material situation, then it's punishment. No, that's for the mundane consciousness. The point is it's once already punished by being here. You know, it's just like you once already in prison, but other prisoners think, well, he didn't respect me properly, so we have to punish him like that. But it's not actually the way the city council looks at it. You know, in other words, from the spiritual platform. So, yes.
This point here of the, you know, how a kshatriya can't refrain from gambling, can't refrain from...
It's not a matter of not refrain, it's a matter of it's political. He said here, for political reasons.
So is that...
For political reasons, sometimes you have to take to these sinful activities.
Yeah, so here we've got the nichasiddha bhaktas engaging in such. Now, would that be considered inauspicious?
Would it be considered inauspicious? Depends what you're calling inauspicious.
Well, is it outside of uttama bhakti?
How do you define uttama bhakti?
Well, Rupa Goswami does a good job with that. I mean...
But I'm saying he does a great job, but are you connecting the two? That's my question.
Well, that's what I'm thinking along those lines. See, I mean, like Prabhupada, for instance, with this purport, there would be, you know, some maybe devotees that don't have so much integrity could utilize that.
Yeah, but if they don't have integrity, then not kshatriyas.
Right, okay.
So, you know what I'm saying? Kshatriya means integrity.
The point is that it seems a little like kind of an odd purport in that regard.
There's the purport itself and its presentation, and then it means your question itself, the direct question, you know, applying it to the Pandavas. See, now the Pandavas is that second canto of Bhagavatam, you're looking at Krishna is everything, right? That's the first point. Second point is he is within everything what you value, because you're not going to find Krishna in everything that there is. You're going to find him him within the sphere of your values, right? Then he himself is beyond that as a person, right? And so at all times, all places, all circumstances, you should be seeing this, right? So now the activity is considered sinful because it's not connected to the Lord, right? Now, because the Shastra will say that this shouldn't be done. Why not? Because these are the areas of attachment where the living entity becomes so distracted that there's no question of thinking of Krishna, right? Now, if... In this case, then they're seeing the it's reduced down to the Brahman platform, that the properness is Krishna as Brahman, since he's everything. Then what is the appropriate elements of him as the masculine principle of the gambling and the feminine principle of the forms and activities of gambling? Are those being matched properly? So in other words, is he rolling the dice correctly? Is he following the form of the gambling match? Right, so reducing it down to that, then he's connecting it to Krishna. So it's already been spiritualized by that activity. He's actually getting liberation, right? But it's happening from the Brahman platform, right? If you're not seeing it from the Brahman platform, it's not a matter of that it works. You say, well, anybody could do that. Yeah, anybody who can see things through the Brahman platform, like that. So. Then that puts them on the Brahman platform. But as devotees, they're doing these activities and performing their kshatriya duties for in their interaction with Krishna, because Krishna is taking the role of a kshatriya, their kshatriya is, and this way they're related and they have so many things. So now their dependency on Krishna and all that in this, because as was pointed out here, is that it's an unavoidable performance of their duty. So therefore that risk that they're taking within that, they're dependent upon Krishna to protect them. Right? And we see that he did. So for them, where's the sin? But the point is they're seeing it fully through all the points that the Bhagavatam's explaining. Right? Now, if it's up to them and their natural state, they won't be involved in gambling. But Duryodhana, he's not. He's a gross materialist. And so he's using these rules within the Vedic culture for his own material purpose. So the Pandavas, therefore, since it's unavoidable, deal with it, but on the purely spiritual and devotional platform. So that's what we're talking about. So there's no problem. The thing is this, if we attempt it, then there'll be a problem, because we're not seeing it from there. We're seeing it from sense gratification. Oh, that's sense gratification. For them, it's not sense gratification. So there's no duality here. Does that make sense? But that's why it's in the pastime. They do it. But even then, it's not recommended. When Manu mentions about gambling, the kshatriyas, even though they could be involved in it, it says they shouldn't. And it gives example. Right? Because it didn't work out well for Nala. Right? It's exactly the same situation. Right? The gambling was there, he lost the kingdom. Right? So that story was then told to Yudhishthir, so that he, because Nala then got everything back with time. And so then Yudhishthir will get everything back. So it's already mentioned. So all these four principles are already mentioned. What happens to people who follow it? Because it's not that, oh, you can do this. That's not the point. No. If for political reasons you can't get around it, then it may be involved. But the point is you're talking about people who know the Dharma Shastra, so they know all the rules, so they can definitely find a loophole and try to get around it. If Duryodhana had invited him, Yudhishthira wouldn't have gone. He has no obligation. But because Dhritarashtra specifically invited him, therefore following authority, his senior, therefore then he was sinless. But if Duryodhana, and then when Duryodhana had Shakuni gamble for him, he complained. Because that's against the rule. But Dhritarashtra thought it was fine. So if Dhritarashtra wasn't involved, it wouldn't have happened. Because there's no need to get involved. Right? Means one. Yeah. So is that okay? So that something? Yeah. So it's just a matter of, see, because when Rupa Goswami is defining the pure devotional service, also in there is that the engagement of your occupational duty in the Lord's service, that's not devotional service. It's the desire to please Krishna that's the devotion. That's the fine point. Like that. Because otherwise, then you perform a kshatriya activity, that's devotional service, that means karma is the cause of devotion. Right? And so it's free from karma and jnana, meaning it has to have been done to please Krishna. So that's what makes it pure devotional service. The form, then you have your ideal form, and always recommended are the pious forms. Because the pious forms are the forms that Krishna likes to interact on. Since it's Krishna, it is everything, and so therefore the basis is you're interacting with Krishna. He prefers the pious. But if you don't have the ideal form of piety, then whatever form you have, you see the Krishna conscious elements within them. You see Krishna within it, and then work within that circle. So it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Right? So devotion is the biggest. Liberation is then next. Dharma is then after that. Then artha, and then kama. So, you know, the circle gets very, very small.
Yes, sir. Gaurav Swami gave an example in a Nectar Devotion course years ago of a man in that
a very wealthy man that they met with in terms of life membership. And he was claiming to be, you know, very devotional. And he took out a little tin, a little silver container that he had tulsi leaves in. And then he said, you know, and I always put this in my chai. You know, mm-hmm. you know, his idea was this is pleasing to Krishna, you know, anything to keep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the point is that it may be pleasing, the practitioner may think it's pleasing to Krishna, but it has to be within the guidelines that come from Guru Sadhu and
Shastra. Yes. So what I said before, that's what we were mentioning.
Yeah.
What I was saying, that's second canto of Bhagavatam. The point is what is the form? See, there's two different forms here. Now, that he made his chai properly, right, means the tea leaves, if you drop them on the counter, it won't turn into tea. You have to put them into the water. Now, if the water's boiling, you can do it within 5 minutes. If it's not boiling, you have to leave it overnight, right, like that. Then, depending upon what flavors you want, you put in your spices, you put in your sugar, you put in your milk, all these different things. That's the form of it. That made the tea. But the point is he's mixing there is because devotional service means something offerable to Krishna. So it's the tea itself is not what's offerable to Krishna. So then, therefore, putting the tulsi leaf doesn't have any connection. It's the wrong application. You know what I'm saying? Just like, you know, sandalwood paste, you don't put it on, you know, to please Krishna, you don't put it on the altar. You know, you put it on him. You know what I'm saying? I come up to the devotee and he's there, and after I've offered the Krishna, then I put it on the devotees. I put one in dot in the middle of the devotee's back. No, there's a process. So the point is you have to be able to match what form of Krishna you're dealing with. Therefore, what's the internal potency form that matches it? Problem is he's got the wrong match here. His pancharatra and making tea are two different things. Right? So what I was talking about before, that was I was discussing the Brahman platform. You know, so you have to be able to know what goes where.
So there's Artha Shastra, there's Dharma Shastra, and then
there's Kama Shastra.
And there's Vaishnava Shastra.
There's the Mukhya Shastras, and then there's Vaishnava Shastras, yeah.
Right. So the point is that, you know, our guide should be Vaishnava Shastra.
Yeah, but this is Vaishnava Shastra right here. And it starts off in the second canto with Brahman platform, because Krishna is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So Brahman and Paramatma deals with all situations of the material world and working with the material world. Bhagavan means that you're doing that to please him as a person. Otherwise, you're dealing with him as God, how he and his potencies have entered into everything. So that's purifying. That will uplift you. That will give you liberation. But it won't give you devotion. So it has to be done to please him as a person. That gives you the devotion. So all levels of Brahman and Paramatma are how to perfectly deal with the material energy so you're not entangled. But just because you're not entangled doesn't mean you'll go back to Godhead. So therefore there's two aspects there. So I was talking about the first, the Brahman and Paramatma level of dealing with it. Just like I mentioned, even to make tea, you could say on the pious level of, I mean, the level of piety or impiety on taking tea itself, then there's a way to do it. There's a form. But the point is from the bigger perspective, should you be making tea? You know what I'm saying? Just like the thief. A thief following the piety of thievery means he gets what he's looking for, or at least something profitable, and doesn't get caught. If he gets caught, that's against the religion of a thief, right? You understand? But the point is that where does the religion of a thief fit into the whole scale? It's quite right at the bottom. But, so therefore he can see that I am fault means, in other words, why is it like that? Because God made the laws like that. He made the laws of how stealing works or doesn't work. But he also made the laws on whether stealing is good or not. Right? So you have to know what level you're dealing at. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the kids out there in the front yard, and he picks up and makes himself a snowball, and it wasn't a very good snowball. And then he throws it in a really stupid way, and he doesn't hit what he's trying to hit, you know, even though that what he tried to hit was some little girl walking by. Now, you're going to say, that's really stupid. You don't know how to make a snowball. You don't know how to throw a snowball, you know. But at the same time, as now, what you're supposed to throw a snowball at, that's another question altogether. So you have the mechanics of how the material energy works, and then you have it's seeing that mechanics connected to Krishna, and then you see where do the mechanics fit into pleasing Krishna as a person. So you have all these different levels. So if you can understand that, then it becomes very easy to place things, because we have to remember is that the Shastra will define something, you know, will take something and break it apart, put it together, and it will give an understanding, but you have to actually use it, right? Because when we're, let's say we're describing Buddhi Yoga, we have to describe Karma Yoga first, right? Because that's where we're going to start from. Then Jnana Yoga, then Dhyana Yoga. So now we've discussed body, mind, and words. They've been studied separately. Then they'll be put together as Buddhi Yoga. Now, that would be enough if, you know, but the point is then the seventh chapter is saying that it's only enough, it's only called pure devotion when the point was to please Krishna by it. If you started with yourself, I want to please myself, but I'm going to give the result to Krishna, that's called, that's mixed devotional service. Right? So it's the attitude that makes whether something's pure or not. The form is the support. Now the form is very important. You can't separate the form from the result. But the point is that it's the result, the pleasing Krishna, that's the most important. It's the primary, right? And the form used is the secondary. So because Krishna has all good qualities, therefore he prefers forms that have all good qualities. But you have to know where to find the quality, right? Like, so for the thief, then the quality is stealth, right? He slips in, no one sees, he slips out, right? You know, unless it's, you know, somewhere in, you know, Brooklyn, and you come in, knock the wall down, you know, you don't bother with the door or window, just go straight in, take the stuff out, and walk off, right? Like that. But nobody should know you did it, or at least nobody that's going to say anything, right? So that way, then you could say, on a grosser level, it's still stealthy, right? And there were no, it means there was no police car sitting across the street when they attempted it, right? So, stealth is the quality of Krishna. That's the Brahman platform, because stealth is generic. Now you're applying it to the situation, so that means then stealth being Krishna, that means then the internal potency has forms of what makes stealthfulness stealthful. So she defines the forms and the activities by which stealth can be manifest. So if you follow it on that platform, then it's on the Brahman platform, but you have to be able to see that. It's not a matter of you saw it before. If you're not seeing it now, you're not seeing it. Just like if the sense isn't touching the sense object, you're not enjoying it. It's that simple. So it's not that, oh yeah, well anybody could think. No, they can't. Anybody can't think like that. That's the whole point. Otherwise, why is it being discussed so detailed in Bhagavatam? Because you start with you know, the first chapter of Gita. That means everybody's not. And these things are being described in the last chapters of Gita. Why? Because everybody is not doing it. It's the platform of Jnana Yoga. So someone on the platform of Karma Yoga, the person on the platform of Karma Yoga is going to be attracted by illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling. The person on the platform of Jnana Yoga is not. So the basic principle is if you want it, you can't have it. And when you don't want it, then you can have it. That's how energy works. You know, that's why we're here, because we think, no, no, no. When I want it, I can get it. But that's why we're here. You know what I'm saying? The eunuch is sitting there and he has free access to walk around all day in the harem. But he can have nothing. That's how it works. Right? Means the bank manager, if he wants the money, he's removed from his job. But if he understands the money's not mine, I can't have it, I can't claim ownership, they can give him millions and billions of dollars to work with. That's how it works. So this point, that's why I said, Kshatriyas then, for them, dealing with their duties is only as long as they need to do the work. For a Kshatriya, before taking up the position, they're a brahmachari like everybody else. And when they finish the position, they walk away with nothing and go to the forest. That's why you always see, it's always mentioned when the Kshatriya leaves, it always talks about his clothes and ornaments. Every time. Because if it was a Vaishya, he'd walk away with the stuff. Right? Shoot, but the Kshatriya, it's very clear he takes off all the clothes and ornaments from the palace because those are there because of his service. Then they bring clothes from the forest. He puts that on and goes to the forest. So somebody who can do that, then we can talk about this. But we're not talking about someone who wasn't a brahmachari and can't renounce. We're talking about here is that for the occupation is there, but for ashram, then that's not the point. But most are thinking of this in connection with ashram, not varna. When we think of illicit sex, we think ashram. But here is talking varna. When we say kshatriya, we mean varna. Right? You know, so he has kanya bishas, bisha kanyas. Right? You have these young girls, very beautiful girls. You know, they don't have a home or something like that. They're kept in the palace, trained in all the arts and that, really refined, high-class lifestyle, educated, everything. But from the very beginning, they're fed poison. It's a certain amount. And so, because of this, the body develops tolerance. But they're so poisonous that if they kiss someone, they'll die. You know, not so obvious. You know, it's got to give a little time because you have to be able to walk away, you know, in a dignified manner. You know, but the point is they're that poisonous. So, what is that? Is that licit sex? No, they go in there and by their feminine qualities attract whoever it is that, you know, they're supposed to, remove from the, the world gene pool. Right, and then you know, and their activities in that would be classified as illicit sex. So that's political, right? You know, nowadays some ugly guy in some black outfit with a balaclava, you know, comes in with a gun and makes a mess. You know, before they sent in a really nice girl and gave a kiss and left, you know, like that. You know, so you can see the difference in the quality of the culture. Right? You know, is that make sense? So. There's really, really fine points here. So if the culture is understood, the Shastra is understood, like you're saying, because it's authority. If it's understood, then you know this doesn't apply to me. Like that. If one doesn't, then one just goes, Kshatriya, and I like to fight, and I'm nasty, so therefore I can do all these things. No, that's called a Shudra. Like that. We always have to remember, bodyguards are Shudras. Right? That makes sense. You know, the president, the general of the army isn't his bodyguard. It's just some guy who's good, very expert at, you know, the martial science. So he's a Shudra for Kshatriyas. Right? So then they'll say, oh, hey, we're Kshatriyas, we can do all this. You know, no, it doesn't apply. Not at least from that definition.
Maharaj, in our in our relationships, we try to treat devotees well because we know it's important to Krishna. We try to serve them. But because we're conditioned, sometimes managing a relationship can absorb the consciousness and we forget to see Krishna.
Yes.
Even though originally our intent was, well, no, I should serve devotees because, you know, it's important to Krishna. Mm-hmm. So then, why does that happen, even though we started out thinking this is for Krishna, and how do we avoid it?
Okay, it means... The point is the nice thing about the process is as long as ultimately at the end the result gets to Krishna, you get the benefit for the whole endeavor before that, right? But it's pointed out, but you're only getting the benefit at the end when it actually gets connected. Well, if you're actually conscious, then you're getting the benefit from the beginning all the way through. Does that make sense? Like that. So the point comes, it's just we're out of practice, because generally we're used to only doing something for ourselves. That's the only, even we're nice to others, that's why it's called pranamoy, right? Is we're nice to others because we know we'll get benefit from that, right? That's why it's in the platform of artha. Because most, when devotees are discussing it, they're not talking because it's their dharma, that this is what you're supposed to do, right? Like that. That's rare. You do hear it, but it's more rare. You know, and or is it that by associating with devotees and that, because they're on the transcendental platform, that I'll get freed, I'll get liberated. So that. So generally, devotees will avoid kama like the plague, like that. Not that they're not engaged in it, but it's one of those discussions we don't talk about. Like karmis don't talk about death, right? You know, we don't talk about the senses, right? So that's avoided. Dharma, you have to be trained to know that, right? Moksha, generally, it comes in, but generally we don't know it's there. Right? And then bhakti. So generally the two platforms we work nicely from is spiritually devotion, and culturally then artha. You know what I'm saying? So because that's our practice, that we're not getting something, so we're looking to see what we're getting and this and that, so we get distracted. Like that. So it's just practice. The point is that it is devotees, you are getting association, so by doing that, then knowledge and detachment will come. So if one consistently stays at it, then with time, it will improve, one will get better and better at it. But don't worry that it didn't happen overnight. Right? You know, it may take years. But the point is years is nothing compared to eternity, right? You know, we've been here since time immemorial, so a few years is no big investment. Does that make sense? So in other words, you keep at it, but point is pray to Krishna and know it's the attitude that's important. But the point is you're going to express that attitude through the skill in which you do it. Right? But always remember, it's not the skill that's the devotion. It's the attitude to connect that skill to Krishna that's the devotion. Does that make sense? Because the Western mindset, especially the first world Western, is that the skill itself is the most important. The most expertly I perform the skill, that was, you know, that's perfection. But it's yes, that's perfectly executed skill, but it's still, that's not the devotion. The devotion is that you've done that to please Krishna. If you're expert, you do it expertly for Krishna, right? You're not expert, you do the best you can. But the point is, since it's for Krishna, why not learn how to do it better, right? But don't get distracted by the medium. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I just have a quick follow-up. So we see in the third canto when Kardama Muni, he manifests this floating palace. And
right.
It's described that he goes off with his wife, and they seem to be enjoying themselves. And it says 100 autumns pass when this is going on. So
that's a problem.
Well, my I'm curious, because you know he comes back. And
why 100? Why not 99 or why not 108? Wouldn't that be more auspicious?
Perhaps.
Because 100 autumns is generally the Shastric definition of, you know, a long time. You know, blessings, may you live 100 autumns and stuff like that. So 100 autumns is natural, because that's what was said at the time of their vows for marriage, so therefore 100 autumns would be, you know, the suitable romantic number.
So the question comes, is he remembering Krishna when he's, you know, off in his floating palace with all these great pleasures?
Why not?
He comes back and he's
What's the problem? See, that's what I'm saying. What I said in the beginning of the class is, we have this idea, if the senses are engaged, it's sense gratification. No, the senses are engaged, not connected to Krishna, it's sense gratification. The senses are engaged, connected to Krishna, it's called devotional service. This is quite revolutionary to devotees, right? Therefore, we notice that in Prabhupada's prayer, it doesn't say that he went and he's saving the Westerners from their gross, karmic, materialistic, sinful life. It says that he's saving the Westerners from their impersonalism and voidism. Because the point is it's Mayavad philosophy, or let's say it's the Buddhistic philosophy of nihilism, that the senses being engaged, that's material, and so therefore spiritual means the senses aren't engaged. That's the basis of your thought. That's why the doubt is there. It's actually coming from the impersonalistic seeds within the heart. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because the point is he's with his wife. He's not with someone else's wife. Right? Then you can have a doubt. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? He's with his wife. It's according to Shastra. Now, according to Shastra also, the wife generally doesn't have children unless she's happy. What was Kardama Muni's point in getting married in the first place? What did he tell Lord Vishnu? But what was the point? Why did he want someone of character to be involved with? You know what I'm saying? In other words, we only pick on the point where he's engaging the senses. We don't pick on the point where, you know, there's a Krishna conscious son, or he has material desires, so therefore he wants to be able to deal with them in connection with the Lord, free himself from that, and then come to the transcendental platform. We don't catch those parts. Just like in this whole purport, we catch the part about, you know, what the Kshatriyas can break the four regulative principles, right? You know what I'm saying? We'll catch that, you know. Because, why? Because that's our you know, natural Malecha lifestyle, right? You know, that's, so for us, it's, hey, you know, like that. So that's the difficulty, is that we will be attracted by those things. Because notice is that this purport was talking about the Kumara's celibacy, and that because by dint of their life and celibacy, everything's going auspicious for them. But what have we discussed this whole class? All the questions have been about justice, right? And, you know, illicit sex, gambling, like that. Or here, sense gratification, you understand? That's the level of where we're at. We're actually at, you know, third chapter Bhagavad Gita. Right? You know, we haven't even actually made it to fourth. Right? Because that's where our mind moves. Does that make sense? So the point is that he's following Shastra. The point, he's the husband, he has to give protection to the wife. That means he has to protect all these elements that are there. But it doesn't mean when you want. It means all the time. So then the man could say, well, so then I could just take care of my wife all the day. And name me the man who does that. Knock me out. Go ahead. We're waiting. Right? So the point is the man tries to please the wife, or at least what he thinks should please the wife, when he wants. Protection means always. Right? Who is she? She's just village girl? Nice, of course. He's a Brahmin. She's a nice Brahmin girl from the village. You know, never been outside a little village. Who is she? Daughter of Manu. That means her grandfather is Lord Brahma. Okay, she's not an ordinary person, right? So being a girl of that stature, then moving around the universe is no biggie. You know what I'm saying? You know, so the children and grandchildren of Manu, they're always, of Brahma, they're always moving around the universe. So for them, that's normal. You know, it's like somebody from a very rich family to have a Rolls Royce or a Bentley. You know, we'll go, oh, they have Rolls Royce. So for them, it's a car, you know. You understand? Like that. And is she from a Brahmin background? Yes or no? No, Swayambhuva is Kshatriya. So she's a Kshatriya background. So therefore a palace. So a palace that flies around the universe is quite standard for someone of that category. You know what I'm saying? So keep that in mind next time you are dealing with, you know, in a marriage arrangement, you know, like that. We need the flying palace here. You know, do you understand? What you left out is that it's just by desire where you want it to go, it goes there. You know, you don't have to sit there. It's not that, you know, David Hootie's up there in the front, you know, yeah, I got it, you know. No, this is a man's shot. Hey, forget it, I'm driving. No, it's just you desire, it goes there. So, in other words, he's perfectly fulfilled all the desires of a woman. So now what's left? You know what I'm saying? What happens to the man who's done everything? What happens? What's the next step? Yeah, I mean, that's it. Because he's done everything. There's nothing left. That's what grihastha life is. Problem is people try to be vanaprasthas as grihasthas. That's where our community fails. They're not grihasthas. You understand? So, he fulfilled all the desires within religious principles, within according to his duty. Right? And then what's left? Sitting down and listening to your son explain, you know, the third canto Bhagavatam. And he goes to the forest. You understand? So the point is he's dealt with it completely according to his position. Now, if he was an ordinary Brahmin, can his wife expect a flying palace? No, he's son of Brahma. So if she was a Brahmin girl, there would be no flying palace. They just live in their little hut, right? Kasyapa and Diti, they just live in their hut. No flying palace. But she's a Kshatriya. He's got the ability, so he arranges it. He doesn't have the ability. He's not obliged. So what is your social status? What's her social status? What is the facility you have that comes without much endeavor? Right? It wasn't a big endeavor for him to make it. Doesn't say he was foaming at the mouth for, you know, 10,000 years, you know, standing on his toes to get this palace. No, it didn't say anything. He just, you know, thought, okay, let's make this palace. Done. Okay? Then that's the point. So what comes easily, the man can do that, then he does that for his wife. But it's within religious principles. Right? Does that make sense? And, you know, in the Prajapati Singh that they live about, you know, how you say, 311 trillion years, so 100 autumns is no big deal. I wouldn't worry about it, you know, like that. You know, like that. And as I said, the 100 autumns is what's mentioned in the marriage rite. So therefore, it's a nice number. You know what I'm saying? That Devahuti would appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? But the point is the senses connected to Krishna. They'll offer everything to Krishna in that, because the point is he got his wife by praying to Krishna. Right? He didn't just was in the temple room and went, wow, she looks good. You know what I'm saying? You know, and then sent a little note with his friend, put it in her shoe, you know, the stuff. He didn't do that. You know what I'm saying? He approached the Lord after doing austerities. So why wouldn't he be God-conscious throughout the whole thing? Why would he be mentioned? Right? Why would he be the first story, basically, after Shukadev Goswami has explained how to see everything on the Brahman platform? Right? That's what Second Canto is doing. So he's doing it. So he's taking the Second Canto teachings that we'll take as boring as anything and applying it into his household life. Look at what he got. God is his son. And a very happy wife. And he left for the forest. They worked out nice, you know. You know what I'm saying? It worked out good, you know, like that. Then the music comes up, right, like the credits come, there's a sunset. You know, it worked out great. You know, you see him walking off in the distance. She's there, you know, talking to Kapila. You know, there's a few between the credits. You know, he said something and this and that. You know, it's like that, you know. Okay? So it worked out nice. So that's the thing, is we'll take it by the form, but what's the quality that goes with that form? That's what we miss, because that's what's Krishna. That's the whole point, is that we're seeing the form of this, but that's the form for what? That we're not seeing. So that's what the Sukadeva Goswami is saying, how to find Krishna in everything. Right? And it, you can either go straight, or you go from the form and get to it. Right? Does that make sense? You know, let's say I have a lawn that has long grass, and I have a lawnmower, okay? Now, from that form, I can get back to what will happen, right? But what's the actual point? Why the lawnmower? What is it for? What does it accomplish on the platform of Krishna? Right? We'll say cut the grass, but why cut the grass? Why is it important that the grass is cut? I mean, of course, the local council will come along and fine you or something like that. But other than that, what's the reason to cut your lawn? This is the problem. We only know how to see Krishna's energy. And then we, when we see it, we use it for ourselves. Rather than see Krishna's energy and how to use it for Krishna. So if you can't see Krishna, how are you going to get it? Point is the lawn is there. So the aesthetics, orderliness, you know, these kind of qualities that then bring out the element of goodness. You know what I'm saying? So the person who has that really nicely manicured lawn, they have a regulated lifestyle. The guy who's, you know, his front yard looks like a bomb hit it, they don't have a regulated lifestyle. Why? Because there's less of the mode of goodness. You understand? So this is what then you see. So the mode lawn means these qualities of Krishna are manifest. And those forms are how you got it. But you can also get that by, you know, keeping the inside of your house nice, or wiping the floor, or keeping your clothes washed, you know, wearing them properly, dealing properly, you know, all these different, so there's so many forms. In other words, there's unlimited ways to serve Krishna. So there's unlimited manifestations. That's the point. Krishna is one. His energies are many. Right? So that means there's unlimited manifestations of that, even that singular quality of Krishna. But we're only trained to see the forms and the activities and the results, because the results are for us, rather than the results for Krishna. But how do you know what the result is from that form unless you know what the mechanics are? Okay? That's what the Shastra is telling us. When it's talking Brahman and Paramatma, that's what it's teaching us. But we'll generally find those parts boring. Okay? Okay, so we'll end here. Sorry. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainata Gaura Premanandi ki.